This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris with the Norris Group. Today, our special guest, once again, is Senator Bob Wachowski. Last week, we talked about ADUs, SB 1069, and what it involved. And today, we will be talking more about SB 13, the latest bill when it comes to accessory dwelling units. Let's get to it.
So the 1/2 mile is there. I got to see the person in charge in LA, their transportation department. They're really working on a lot of multimodal. It's not spelled out. I was just curious for the cities that are doing that for the 1/2 mile rule, maybe it doesn't even apply to LA, but are you speaking mainly about trains and buses, or at some point will it include those scooters and bikes that these companies are leaving out and about?
That's a good question, because we have in 1069, there's ride share. There's a provision. It's much closer than 1/2 mile, but I think it's on your same block.
Okay.
If it's located on the same block, that you have a ride share. So I would imagine that the scooter and bike is a ride share program. I didn't think about it, but I think I'd have to go back and look at the language of 1069, but it did say, again, it limited to the same block that you were on.
Interesting.
And I don't know if I said automobile ride share program, it just said ride share. So that would, the scooters are a ride share, aren't they?
There's a fee, but if LA, I think it's LA DOT, if they sort of build it into some kind of, like New York City, they have the ride card. I don't know about LA. I haven't taken a lot of their subway. But yeah, if they somehow build that into part of their multimodal transit system, yeah, technically.
I mean, remember, cities can always do what they want to do. Or again, I'm dealing with those 282 or change cities that aren't doing what the state law says. So I hope that some of the more urban areas that are adopting.
Yeah. Okay.
That are adopting ordinances will get clever.
Well, okay. So the new bill requires ordinances to allow an 850 square foot structure, and that's up from 800 square feet. Is there any backstory to that?
Well, we just want to have a one bedroom. We wanted to include one bedrooms versus efficiencies, because I think at 800 feet, and again, your investors would know, you can get a one bedroom in, but a lot of times that just creates one big huge efficiency, and we want to have different types of ADUs. That's why I did 1200. To say that you limited 1200, because I wanted to have that two bedroom.
Well, hey,
opportunity in an ADU.
After living in New York City for 7 years, that, 850 square feet is quite generous. But the bill also spells out if there's more than one bedroom, it's up to 1,000 square feet. So you're really locking in more specifics here. So that's good. Okay.
And also it's for the creative types in this, the guys that designed these, LA 2 years ago was looking at a prototype that was going to be 1,000 square foot, two story, but the footprint was only 500 square feet. So it was going to be, 500 double decker, right? That two story ADU in the backyard. We're in crisis. We're in crisis, and not everybody, some people need that extra space, right?
Yep.
And also it makes it attractive to the homeowner who has got a 2,500 square foot house that says we're going to downsize, but instead of going out to Del Webb community, we're just going to stay right here in our backyard.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, they could move into the ADU and travel the world and rent out the front. It's brilliant. What should investors and homeowners understand about local building standards? Like, what overlays as of now can they do? Historic districts, size of lot? Because sometimes it's feeling right now that investors are educating the planning department. So want to be clear on what overlays are acceptable.
Well, they've got some of them have the hazardous, like an earthquake zone or a landslide zone or a state zone for fires, that they have restrictions on those. Not every city. In fact, most cities don't, but there are, I know Fremont has a landslide area that's been mapped, much to the chagrin of all the people who bought houses in the landslide area. But those existing restrictions on development was what we're trying to get. The other building standards are just, you know, the physical look of what the house looks like. You know, I mean, some people, I don't speak disparaging of the one-story ranch-style stucco houses that are predominant in California that local owners or local districts will say, but I'm thinking about Seaside, you know, or not Seaside, Sea Ranch, that's got the weathered, this redwood paneled outside building. So if you owned a lot and you want to put an ADU in there, and they said, well, you can't just put in the mission style stucco house. It has to have these restrictions and these exterior look, right?
Okay. Okay. And historic zones, is that still in? That's an overlay that's possible?
Yeah. Historic zones were in 1069.
Okay. Got it. I think one of the biggest changes that this audience will be excited to hear about is the owner occupant requirement. We love this. Thank you very much. is that one of the biggest hurdles that you've been disappointed in watching the cities do, is make that change?
Yeah. I mean, it's nonsense. I mean, you think about owner occupancy. There's a study that came out with the four biggest cities that don't require owner occupancy. And there's, you know, Portland is in there. They'll come to me, to my mind. Vancouver's another one. And this whole fear of this whole private equity firms coming in, buying up every house that exists, building ADUs, it's just unwarranted. It just hasn't occurred. And then if you think about it, you think, let's say you own a commercial building. You don't require that the owner of the commercial building have space in the commercial building. I mean, can you imagine how ridiculous? Or if I own an apartment complex, or if I own a fourplex, you don't say, if you own a fourplex, you've got to live in one of the fourplexes. We don't do that on any other form. And all of a sudden, somebody sitting back in the planning department or legal department said, oh, let's just require owner occupancy for, why, to encourage people to do this? And, you know, and a lot of it, let's be honest, I mean, in the foreclosure crisis, a lot of people lost their houses, and a lot of people bought, a lot of investors bought these houses because you could buy a house for $250,000 and it costs $400,000 to build. Who doesn't want to take that? If you got $250,000, who doesn't take that deal? You don't even have to rent it out, right? It just is an investment. So that ship has sailed. That's done. Those people already lost those homes.
Yep.
You know, investors don't go in when the market's high right now and buy stuff. I mean, maybe somebody does, but normally you buy low and you sell high, right? So if I bought 100 houses in, let's pick a city, Pasadena, and I want to put, you know, I want to put ADUs in all of them, why do I care, right? I mean, it just seems an unnecessary restriction. But
yep.
The topping on the cake, Aaron, is that banks don't like it, you know, and banks are saying that these deed restrictions that some of these cities, you know, some of these cities now, their ordinance say if you build an ADU, you have to put a deed restriction on the title of your land that when you sell it, the person has to take, it has to be owner occupied. It's restricted. We're going to wipe that out. That's crazy, because here's the problem. If I'm a bank and I have a mortgage on the house and you go into foreclosure, I cannot foreclose on that property unless I take owner occupancy. They'll recall all those loans. That's a non-starter.
Well,
that you would never
agree.
But again, banks, I mean, cities just want to throw up whatever monkey wrench they can put into the system. So that's what we're trying to correct. But it's red meat for some folks. I get it.
Well, from the investor standpoint too, it's very difficult to go into these, you know, so many different cities who have not created an ordinance and take that risk. They just they won't, if they're aware of this, and build an ADU not knowing, having clarity on the bill. One of the things that we are warning investors on is short-term rentals. Of the ADU conversation, as the cities were having to write these ordinances, is that they were probably going to put restrictions on short-term rentals and vacation rentals in the city. And I get that, because the bill is trying to address affordable housing. So is that an overlay that the local municipalities will still be able to do?
Yeah, that I considered it, and I'm agnostic on the short-term rentals. It seems there are some cities that I represent Milpitas, California. Who wants to go to Airbnb in Milpitas? I have no idea, right? If the Niners are in the Super Bowl and you're 6 miles from the game, then that's a once every 20 years. Maybe I shouldn't say that to the ownership team, but if you're in a city that you have an ADU and you want to rent it out for something like that, but I get it that some folks don't want to limit that use, and that's up to the local control. That's up to them.
Well, another one of the big changes was, if the municipality doesn't give you a permit in 120 days, it was considered approved, and your SB 13 moves it to 60 days. So yeah. I would love to know why that change was necessary. I love it.
It was 60 days. I started off in 60 days on SB 1069. It got through the Senate at 60 days. It got into the Assembly on the Housing Committee, and it was one of the things that the cities and counties were bellyaching about. They couldn't get this done, and I was saying, it's ministerial. It should be done in 6 minutes, not 60 days. These plans should be approved over the counter. But they were complaining, and the chair asked if it was one of those negotiations on the spot that I took, and I said, fine, I'll accept an amendment, because I was fighting it. It was one of those thoughts that came up when I was fighting it. And then, Aaron, it's a funny thing. You do some research, and you find out that there was a 1977 law that said it was this Permitting Streamlining Act that required all decisions to be made from the cities and the counties within 60 days. And so that gets you back to, when I go back to 1069 and I think about the critics who are criticizing the bill and saying we can't do this, and I says, you have to issue a permit for a high-rise commercial building in your city within 60 days, but you can't get an ADU done, and how dare you come into this the legislature and argue this, and I'm trying to be, people like legislators that seem to be willing to listen to the critics and take a compromise language. So I did it. Then my staff did the research and found out that this is a 1977 law that they had to comply with it anyway. So that's why it's back.
Okay.
And you can imagine if they raise the issue again that they can't approve it again. I'm saying, you're not doing your job. These should be ministerial. You should have guidelines so the investor community knows this is one and done. I go in there for an hour and I get my permit. But it was misleading from the advocates that wanted it a longer period of time and were saying they couldn't get it done.
Just logistically, if I'm an investor or even a homeowner, gone in to get the permit and it's just not getting done, after day 60, it's considered approved. Am I going to have any problem with the city? Can they fine me? Like, what are the ramifications that the city would have against me?
Yeah, they would have none.
Okay.
Who wants to go to court? I mean, your investors are investors. They're not saying, I want to go to court. That's why we put in the language about, there's language in there about HCD, or Housing Community Development, HCD, having authority, and the Attorney General being the backstop, because the Attorney General is our attorney. So if there's really bad acting, because there are some cities now that people have permits that are hanging out there for a year, they haven't got approved. It's just like, you can't thumb your nose at the law. So the idea is to give some enforcement mechanism. What that did is that creates a cost, and that's why I'm in front of the Appropriations Committee right now is to review what the cost is. But I think it's just a necessary cost. Even if I wasn't changing the law with SB 13, I would need to have that mechanism in anyway, because what do you do? You can't have cities just ignore people's right to develop their property.
Right.
So that's the bottom line.
No. Well, for those that are on the call live, please start sending in your questions, and I'm trying to work them in because I do still have some questions about SB 13 I think we need to talk about. One of the questions did have to do with mitigation fees and impact fees, and that's the next question anyway. I mean, I've heard some crazy things from different utility companies trying to charge $20,000 to school districts. So you're spelling this out. What should a homeowner or investor expect? Like, what's reasonable, if at all, at this point, if this were to go through?
Well, so this is what we're saying is 750 feet unit pays no impact fees whatsoever. Done. So if you're at 750 feet or less, then you're not paying any impact fees. Just for your audience to know, currently, if you have less than 500 feet in an ADU, you pay no school impact fee. You know, one of the things that happened is last year's bill said there was a flat fee of school impact fee, and saying, well, you know, most of these garage, my garage is 20 by 20, so it's 400 square feet. I wouldn't pay a school impact fee anyway. And the schools are up there saying, we need this money. They're going to, you know, I think the studies that I show is that it's single digits of what these ADUs have kids. And, you know, I mean, it's 8%, 6%, depending on what study you're looking at. So it's not, you know, I'd like to think that this is just young professionals that are living in these things, but what I know, it could have a family. So that's the bit. And then if you have over 750, then it's 25% of what the impact fee is. So again, the cities can pay less, you know, the cities can waive the fee overall, but that's sort of my compromise decision on what the fees are.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, we actually have a builder on the line that says he's been building these, and the utility water meter upgrades are costing up to $10,000 in some cases. So I know that's been one of the issues, is different people reaching out to make some money. So it's nice to,
right.
Yeah.
No, and that's why in 1069 we said, you know, we had the proportional language in, because, you know, the argument is that we have a 4-bedroom house. And when a 4-bedroom house paid their developer fee, this was, you know, this is the time of Ozzie and Harriet. Mommy and Daddy were in one bedroom, and the three little pigs were in the other three bedrooms. So there were five people using the toilets, using the water, using electricity. That was it. Well, we know now, you don't have to be a genius, that 4-bedroom house typically has two people in it. So putting an ADU on it means there's still only three people stressing out the system. So you're below what was originally put in. Even if you put two people in the ADU, you're below the five people that were in there. So that was the theory on the proportionality. So we're trying to, because the water districts and everybody was, you know, fiddling around. And again, if you have an old house, you should probably upgrade your electricity anyway, right? So this would probably be a good time to do it. I did a remodel of my house, and I have two electrical boxes, big deal, you know, and that then you have to pay, but it should be the homeowner's decision, right? You know, of what they want to do.
Well, we've got probably about 8 more minutes, and really quick before I forget, I want to, if people are interested in supporting you in SB 13, what can we do? Because people are on the call from all over the state, and later this will be on. Is there anything that we can do to encourage people, our legislators, to vote on this?
Yeah, I mean, we got, obviously the best thing they can do is contact their senator and their assembly member and say, this is SB 13 is the best thing since sliced bread. We want you to vote for it and get their commitment. And then, you know, send them the text, send them the email, and, you know, make sure that they know that you're watching them, and you want, this is a piece of solving the housing crisis that we have. And it makes sense. It's no nonsense. So that's the biggest thing. And then if people send copies of that to my office, you know, then we would have that, you know, that we collect this, you know, how many people are supporting, where they're coming from. And I, you know, typically will try to put that into my opening statement. I've heard from all 58 counties, from members, people that want to build the ADUs and they're having problems or something along those lines.
Well, in this next phase, I definitely want to get through some of these questions. And I think we're going to have to specify SB 13, the upcoming that's being proposed versus what's happening, what should be allowed to happen now. So I've got a question about the City of Hawaiian Gardens has a moratorium and they just extended a year for lots less than 7,500 square feet. And they're saying they're doing it for a parking study. Should that be allowed at this point under current law?
No, absolutely not. You can't have a moratorium on ADUs, and you can't have a minimum lot size of 7,500 square feet. I mean, it's just more games.
It is a game.
That ordinance, that passing of that ordinance would have been voided under 1069. That would be the legal argument. Now, how the developer can go in, and again, right now, HCD doesn't have that muscle, doesn't have the person to go in and say, this is void. Here's a copy to the homeowner and the person with the ADU and say, you need to do this, or a letter from the Attorney General's office and say, you can't do that. I mean, they can work on their ordinance. That's fine, but they have to comply with 1069. 1069 says there's no moratorium. That's for sure. And there's no minimum lot size. For sure.
What can we do when we're running into these problems? Do we contact the state and ask for a letter from Greg Nicholas up there saying, hey, this is not allowed? Or what ramifications do we have at the local level?
I mean, right now, that's what we have. Right now, what we have is, I mean, obviously, you can hire an attorney, you can sue the city. That's people, they're builders, they're homeowners, they're not litigants. But you send it to HCD, and they keep track of it, and they're presumably, I don't know how, I mean, sometimes they do make a friendly phone call, but beginning in January 1, they're going to be able to take action on this. And again, this is one of these arguments that I'm trying to make with my colleagues and the members of the assembly, is saying, you guys, there are some, San Diego's doing a wonderful job, right? You know, and they're trying to figure out what to do. They want to encourage this versus these other cities. So sorry to hear about that nightmare.
Yeah, she's been working on that for a while. So another good question comes to HOAs and CC&Rs. As I understand it, regardless of SB 13 goes through, it still would not apply for those private communities. Would that be the case?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. You know, and I was tempted to include HOAs because, you know, I think that HOAs fall into, you know, different categories. There's some HOAs that are basically tract homes in the city. In order to, you know, save themselves some money, they said, well, you got to create an HOA, and you're trying to figure out is there a clubhouse that they run together, or what makes this a, you know, homeowners association other than just the organization at the beginning versus a condo, you know, a townhouse condominium type of stuff. I know Assemblymember Friedman has a bill that would extend the 1069 and the ADU ordinances to the homeowners associations.
Would you like real estate investors to send to your office some case studies if they come up?
Oh, sure.
Okay. Yeah, I've got another investor that says the city of Chula Vista, which is in San Diego, is charging $15,000 to $25,000 for fees for an ADU on top of permitting fees. So that's the kind of stuff I know we've been running up against. Interesting to note.
And that's, again, the permitting fees are going to stay there. I'm not taking away that, but this impact fee that they're charging a lump sum, and not to make the people of Chula Vista feel any worse, but there are some cities that are higher. They go north of $15,000. Much further north than $15,000 as a discouragement. And again, SB 13 would say you can't do that anymore. It's over unless it's over 750 feet. And then it would be in, if my math is right, 3,750. That's a different check to write, right?
Yeah.
For a big unit.
One of the interesting conversation I think Riverside has actually been mulling around is the thought that tiny homes, which technically falls under DMV regulations, not Title 24, not Title 25, but DMV rules, that they would consider that as part of the ADU. So it's interesting that every city, you're right, they can get more aggressive, but that's going to be a city by city thing. And if it falls under that category, as I understand it, it wouldn't re-trigger the reassessment of the property. So that's an interesting play.
Correct.
But investors just need to know that right now, we funded a few of these via our hard money loan division. They're doing a beautiful job. They're buying a three-bedroom, two-bathroom, and they're building on an ADU, and they're renovating the front. At the same time, they're building the ADU, so they look really nice. The appraisals haven't been the issue. So far, it's been the lenders just haven't caught up. But what I understand, although under ADU rules, manufactured housing and prefab should be fine, but manufactured housing can trigger problems with financing. You just need to see it coming. It's going to take some years to catch up.
Every opportunity I have when I'm with the bankers is to ask them to come up with a product. To come up with a product for the different, again, the manufactured ADU, person who's purchasing a property that's building the ADU or doing an ADU conversion as part of the purchase before they take occupancy, and make them qualify for the anticipated rent that they're going to be able to get, right? Mm-hmm. That they want to take the money. And then the fixed income, seniors who on paper don't look like they have any money, but they're going to build the ADU, and this is what the loan's going to be, and this is, they're in Sunnyvale across the street from, Microsoft, and saying, well, I think I could get $2,000 for it, whatever. That real life experience is the bankers come to the table.
Well, we have to wrap up. I know I really appreciate the time they're spending, and we still have more questions. Maybe I'll follow up with your team and send a few more that I have. What is interesting about this, and let's end with this, is that you are attempting to give some teeth to the state. So they are reviewing the ordinances that are in place, and they have some feedback. What's the thought on the compliance? If the cities are not in compliance, what will the state be able to do?
Well, I think the ultimate step would be the Attorney General's office. I mean, I've been talking to the Attorney General's people about supporting SB 13, getting them online, and saying, all you need is one lawsuit,
yep.
Right? All you need is one lawsuit on the most egregious activity that the cities have done, and saying, no, I'm going to issue these permits. Here's the backlog. I'm issuing the permits, and we're going to, if we go through with this, we're going to sue you, and we're going to fine you for your obstinance. And then that's a beautiful presentation at a League of City conference to make sure, well, you thought you could get away with it. That's not happening anymore. And it's sort of as we started this with the Huntington Beach conversation, and you think, okay, bad actors, here's the first suit. We know there's 27 of you. What's going to happen here? Right. Mm. And so,
well, I know this is not, we do wish you luck. This is a really important move, and I know a lot of real estate investors are excited. We're excited. We're going to create a second program because we have a lot of investors with 30-year mortgages on rentals that start with a 4, and they're not going to refi under normal circumstances. So we're going to create product to help them build more, and I think it's the right audience. They're used to being landlords. They know about construction. These are professionals that can get it done quickly. So I will make sure on the website to link to your office, so if they have case studies and some problems, they'll send it to you so you can include it as examples of bad actors. That would be awesome. I'm not suggesting anybody get into lawsuits with the city. That could be very drawn out and very expensive. So we'll do what we can.
Yeah, Aaron, and I appreciate what you're doing, and also the people that are following you on this webcast, because I think it's once cities see it and neighbors see it, when they see what it looks like, then all of a sudden it's, oh, that's what an ADU is, and I'd like one of those in my backyard, or my grandma's not doing so well, and maybe we'll move her back from Wisconsin and she can come over here, and people see it in this, and the city planners and the city council people and everybody sees it, and it's a nice, it should have a happy ending when we're done.
Well, I hope so. This is the long haul. You've been after this for a while, and I thank you for your leadership in this front. It's pretty neat to see this in action. So when does this go up for a vote?
It's on the suspense calendar for on appropriations on May 16th. So then it would be eligible for the Senate floor if it gets through appropriations the following week. So after, is that after Memorial Day? Mm-hmm. Before Memorial Day.
Okay.
Right.
And then after that,
then it goes over to the assembly. We start all over. We go to local government and housing and community development. I think.
Are you fairly positive that this will make it through this time?
Yes. I mean, I've been working. You know, some of the changes I made from skating up the bill. I'm still saying with the three core, but skinning it up, and having advocates like you and other investors talk with folks and have other members from other cities that they're going in, and the cities are modernizing the ADU program and homeowners are excited, and there's a little bustle that's going on with some development in the city that otherwise is rather meager on new home development.
This is filling a needed gap.
I'm much more optimistic this year.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And on our website, we'll link to your office. And just thank you so much for your time. And we'll probably be back, hopefully celebrating the pass of this later this year.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the hard money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.